Hello and welcome to another edition of the Legal Geeks. I'm here as always with my legal geek buddy and partner, Josh Gilliland. And while we are still not in the same location, we are at least in the same time zone for a change. Josh has entered the great Midwest. Welcome to the Midwest, Josh, and Central Time.
Thank you, Jessica and everyone. Live, well, now recorded in Chicago. Apparently, I've voted for Democrats in the past 7 elections here. I don't know how that happened.
We are so not going down that road. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying, besides the storms we've been having in the Midwest lately, I hope you're enjoying your time in the friendly Midwest in the middle of June, which is a fantastic time to be here.
I walked by the John Daly Courthouse and paid my respects to the final scene from the Blues Brothers. It was...
Oh, nice.
It was a cathartic experience to be on a mission from God and to honor them.
Oh, I love the Blues Brothers. That's a good flashback. I like that.
Which is why we're here, not because of Jake and Elwood, but because of summertime movies.
That is true. It is a very fun time to be going to the movies right now, and I don't know when I'm going to have time to see all of them. There are a million movies coming out that I want to see. I may have to say, I think actually, you know, Spy and Trainwreck were at the top of my list. I think Minions may have now jumped to the lead. We just saw a trailer for Minions this weekend, and it looks so hysterical. I cannot wait to see it.
Banana. Yeah, it's it looks fun. It looks like a lot of fun.
They just look so adorable. So speaking of which, we'll start, since I already kind of jumped into the kids' movies, we'll start briefly with just a brief shout-out to Inside Out, which I took my kids to this weekend because that's how I roll on weekends. And it was a fantastic movie, a ton of fun. I went in, of course, as a fan already of Amy Poehler and Mindy Kaling. I mean, they're two of my favorite, you know, people in Hollywood right now, period. I love their work as actors, as writers, as, what do you call somebody who writes their own memoir? What is that called? A memoirist? I don't know. Autobiographer?
An author?
Well, an author, but I thought there was something for somebody who writes memoirs. Anyway, I must be making that up. But so I thought it was a ton of fun. I'm guessing you have not seen it, right, Josh, since you're not dragging around a couple little ones?
No, and I wasn't able to borrow my cousin's kids to go because they're off in Europe for all their on sabbatical because apparently that's
wow.
What doctors and scientists get to do. You don't see lawyers go on sabbatical. No, that never, ever happens.
Actually, my first law firm, they did have a deal like that, where if after you were a partner for 10 years, you would get to take, I can't remember if it was a 3 or 6 month sabbatical. And I was like, wow, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, but a sabbatical for a lawyer who's probably hyper stressed out after being a partner for 10 years is probably more like a health clinic of some kind.
Oh, like all those celebrities who always check into hospitals for exhaustion. I want to do that all the time. I'm like, can I do that? Is that a thing? Because I'm exhausted right now.
Is that covered by insurance? I would like it to be.
Can I tell the kids mommy has to go to the hospital for exhaustion for a little while?
In the early 19th century, that was a thing. So...
I'll have to bring that back. But anyway, but I did think Inside Out was a ton of fun. Obviously, most of it occurs in the brain. It gives a good way to talk kind of about our emotions and how things happen in the brain. And of course, there have been some great articles about how Pixar really sat around and thought about, you know, how can we visually show the different things. One of my favorite things, of course, was showing how those annoying jingles will pop into your brain every once in a while. They did a very cute job of explaining how that happened. As far as legal issues, I couldn't really see any in there except for the fact that a part of the plot was that this family moved from Minnesota. I forgot. That was very exciting. They moved from Minnesota to San Francisco, and they let their 11-year-old daughter start her first day of school by herself. So like she had to walk out into the, you know, the mean streets of San Francisco by herself at age 11, and they were just like letting her wander all around the city. So I'm like, that seems a bit of a child endangerment thing to me. I'm here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I get nervous letting my kids do the 5-minute walk home from our suburban school. So, I don't know. As a parent of an 11-year-old, I'm like, I would not let my 11-year-old wander the streets of San Francisco. And I know there's been debates over the years about at what age can you start letting kids kind of do these sort of things. But that one seemed a little bit on the verge to me. So other than that, though, I do say it was a great movie, a ton of fun, but not one with a lot of legal hot topics.
I think it would depend on what part of San Francisco they live in that would determine whether or not that's dangerous.
Or even how far the walk to school is, too, obviously. If they're super close to the school as opposed to a ways away. So, but I did. That was the one part as a mom where I'm like, this is not cool. I do not like this. But
Yeah, it's tough to have free-range kids in the city of San Francisco because of the size and complexity. There are a lot of people. There are people who do. I do know from my volunteer work in scouting that the groups there, you know, the teenagers get around the city and take public transit to where they meet. So it, you know, granted,
and
those are
good and bad stuff. It is a whole thing. Parents, I mean, there's all kinds of, if you want to talk about controversy, you know, forget political controversy, forget religion-based controversy, parenting controversy, you know, I mean, can just bring out heated opinions. So I'm like, I could get hate mail now for this. Cause again, there have been debates about, I let my, you know, 11-year-old go around New York City and it fosters independence and da, da, da. And that's all true. So yeah, I will back off on that, but it is a tough call in a big city like that. So let's get to a safer topic. Let's get to dinosaurs.
Which Jurassic World did have a child endangerment element to it because it's a Spielberg movie. So naturally, there's going to be some children. And naturally, there's going to be at least one teenager making bad life choices. With the, hey, that looks dangerous. Let's go for it.
Go ahead.
You just kind of shake your head. So
yes. See, and I was going to say, I won't see Jurassic World because it's too scary. I've never seen any of the Jurassic movies because I don't like this whole dinosaurs chomping on people. So you will have to tell me about this one. I think you did see some legal issues, but I won't see the movie and you can't get too graphic.
First off, it's not that bad. You don't actually see people get like eaten and ripped apart into little pieces. It's not a horror movie. The dinosaur on dinosaur fight at the end was better than the last Godzilla movie. You just wanted to hold up a lighter and you know, cheer and raise a fist in solidarity because it's like, thank you. I needed that.
Sometimes you just need to see one dinosaur rip another dinosaur to shreds. Is that it? It's cathartic.
It is. You know, growing up watching those Godzilla movies, it's like, I needed that fight scene. It was good. That being said, I have some theories about Jurassic World.
Okay.
First off, the only way that they could open that kind of amusement park with a zoo full of dinosaurs that can eat people is to not do it in the United States.
Yes, it would have to be their own little private, uncontrolled island.
Which is why they have an island 100 miles off of Costa Rica. So that's
okay.
So the more I think about it, it's like having ships that are foreign flag for shipping purposes. So,
yeah.
Because we passed, you know, not to get overly maritime, but we looked at issues with maritime safety and environmental regulations. And the only thing that did was cause shipping companies to go like, yeah, we'll register everything in Liberia.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, lovely. So that backfired. So there was an element of that to it. But when you think about it, if you have zoo animals that would escape from the zoo and go on a killing spree, what's the liability of the zoo?
Oh, which brings up, we'll have to address that with that TV show that's coming out this summer. That's the same plot there. So, Josh, we could readdress it. But anyway, sorry. So what would happen?
So if the animal got out, there's strict liability. If somebody interacted with the animal in a place that was contained where it was supposed to be contained and they did something overt to like get in and interact with it.
As we often hear people doing.
Yeah, they're not, you don't have strict liability for that. There still might be an issue of negligence, but you don't have strict liability. And one of the cases I found was from, I believe, Mississippi in 1925.
Oh my.
Yeah, just in some zoo that was a city zoo had a bear on a chain tied up to a tree while the zookeeper was doing something.
This does not sound like it's going to end well.
Some kid tried feeding the bear and it didn't end well. And the city said, libel. I'm like, this was not okay. You can't do stuff like this. So when you apply that to dinosaurs getting out and eating people, you're going to have massive strict liability. There's no way around it. Now, the film does get into some issues with, you know, the dinosaur escapes its pen, the one that they genetically engineer.
Right. The one who ate her sister or whatever. I've seen that from the promos.
That one. The Indominus Rex ate her.
Yes.
One of the main characters is the aunt of the two children who were in jeopardy throughout part of the film. And they're from Wisconsin with the 608 phone number. So,
woo-woo, Madison area. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, maybe you should buck up and go see it.
No, I don't do scary.
It's not scary. It's fun. It's not. So all that's going on, and you get into some very sophisticated issues with negligence, because when the animal got out, they had some decision points that they could have made to either kill it, and instead they sent people in with non-lethal weapons, and that ended horribly. And so it's nearly 100% of those who were sent in get killed. I think there was like two, maybe three survivors out of a dozen that they start with. So that mistake.
Yeah.
You have the CEO of the company, who is not yet done with his helicopter flight lessons, decide to go up on a combat mission to go out and chase the rogue dinosaur,
which causes
a breach of the aviary, and pterodactyls go flying out and attack all the guests who are now in one central, easy-to-find location.
Of course.
And that was completely no way to escape liability. So the CEO is supposed to be the eighth richest person in the world. He would be liquidated, or his estate would be liquidated, because that was all on him. They could have called in an airstrike. There wasn't an immediate – they had time to deal with this. So
they made it all much worse.
They made it all much worse by doing that. On the flip side, they don't have lawyers writing scripts in order to go, hey.
You need poor decisions. Otherwise, most movies would be very boring.
Now, in comparison to the other Jurassic Park movies, the poor decisions in this film are better than the poor decisions in the other.
Oh.
And so, like in this, the second one, which was a horrible sequel, you have business people and others making really bad decisions that get people eaten and killed. Just like,
oh my.
Horrible, stupid stuff. Just bad. This has less of that. And so you have the teenager who's expected to make a stupid decision.
Yes.
Make a stupid decision because he's a teenage male who's rebellious, and that's what 16-year-olds do.
Right.
We have issues with employee safety because you're supposed to have safe environments for employees. And when people start getting eaten, that's bad.
Well, as I say, like, would this be covered? Of course, if it's not under U.S. law, it doesn't matter. But if it were under U.S. law, would workers' comp apply to those? Like, would that be it? Would they just be limited? You know, in a lot of states, you're just limited to workers' comp, right? So
it's so catastrophic with the injuries that they've had. I think it would go way beyond that.
I don't know. Have you seen some of those worker comp cases? They can be pretty catastrophic.
True, but no
one. If it's within the scope of their employment, like so with those security guards, if their job is to, you know, do this, I don't know. They may be limited.
I don't know. That's a good question. But the situation was so extreme, and you're dealing with exotic animals. And so you would have to look at zookeepers, you know, bitten by cobras probably to know the answer to that. And I don't know the answer to that, but those things could have happened. So there's a little of that that takes place, and that's interesting. A little backstory, the parents of the boys who get sent to Jurassic World who stay in Wisconsin.
They send their children to a dinosaur camp without them?
Yeah, and it's apparently Christmas time, so maybe Christmas just happened. And the aunt is the one running the park. So they send the kids to go spend time with the aunt because the parents are getting divorced.
Okay, but still, you don't send your kids to dinosaur camp. That is awful. That is child endangerment right there.
Not necessarily, because you have, it's like, Aunt Claire is there. She's in charge of the park. Everything would be fine because, hey, that's what sisters do. That being said, they show the parents, like, in negotiations for the divorce.
Yeah.
And it's obviously in a law firm. And the number of attorneys who are there representing each side, it looks like six or seven on each side.
Oh, my God. Are they multimillionaires?
No. And, like, we saw their house. And it was like a normal two-story house. And it was just like, why did they lawyer up to that extreme? Because you think a normal divorce between a middle-class family is going to be like a lawyer on each side.
Yes.
Not looking like it's something right out of Michael Clayton.
No.
It's like, so, really? That many? Why did each spouse bring an army?
Holy fudge, that's insane.
Yeah, so, like, that's kind of a rough one to look at, because you look at it and go, like, well, that's weird.
Like, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes probably had that many attorneys working for them. But otherwise, yeah, no.
Multi-billionaires, movie stars, they can have that.
Psychologists.
Yeah, they could have that. They could totally have that.
But yeah, no middle-class family. They're like, we want to lose our home. That's why we have this many attorneys.
Yeah, because we have to sell the home to pay the attorneys. We're right. Doing this out of spite to each other. That's how much we hate each other at this point. We're each employing seven lawyers to represent us in this fight. So there's a little of that. It's tough not to watch the film and go, like, dear God, the liability. I don't know what kind of insurance they have.
I know. Well, if he's the eighth richest man, he's got to be self-insured. There's a captive he owns in the Grand Caymans that's insuring this whole thing. Because, yes, nobody's insuring that.
And it's tough not to think about Carnival Cruise while reading this case, as in the famous Supreme Court opinion about forum selection clauses and choice of law. Because if I was an attorney for Jurassic World, I would say the forum is Costa Rica. Mm. And that you were all able to fly down. If you want to litigate, we're here.
Yes.
Here in Costa Rica, this is the most convenient form because it's just 100 miles away. And yep. Unfortunately for Jurassic World, no court in the United States would go like, yeah, that's okay. Because they would look at it and go like, you're trying to cut off the ability of consumers from having their day in court. And that would be the reverse Carnival Cruise, because it's not like a situation where you're confined to Washington State.
Right.
You are saying you have to leave North America.
Right.
And go to another country in order to litigate. And no one would say, hey, sure, that's okay. You knew what you were contracting for. That's the price of seeing a live dinosaur.
Mm-hmm. Or seeing your loved ones ripped apart by a live dinosaur.
They apparently had been in operation for at least a decade, maybe more than that, in movie time. And what breaks them is trying to play God more so than they already were by genetically engineering dinosaurs. They had the other problem that there was another division within the company wanting to make weaponized dinosaurs.
Oh, charming.
And so using velociraptors instead of drones. And while it is totally tempting that the idea of dropping 20 velociraptors on ISIS would be pretty awesome.
That would.
However, recalling them, getting them back, that could
keeping them targeting just the right people, yes.
Everyone on the battlefield would turn into a hot lunch, and everyone's going to be fighting for their lives. So on the flip side, I think it would be legal for the military to do that. I did some research, and this because there's
nothing. In case you're interested, Pentagon.
I looked through all the different prohibitions on weapons that can be used in war, and we get into chemical, biological, all things are like germ-based, and that sort of weapon, and that we've been limiting for, like, the earliest one I saw was like the late 17th century.
And yeah. So
then a bunch in the 20th century because we realized mustard gas is horrible. And we won't do this. The Navy can use marine mammals normally, and they're normally done in like a patrol type of way for, and there's very specific rules that the Secretary of Defense can pick, you know, can authorize up to 25 non-endangered marine mammals a year to be taken to learn how to find lost torpedoes, that sort of thing.
And, oh, cool.
So, you know, Ensign Flipper and, you know, Skipper Sammy the Seal that that are on patrol right now doing the nation's work. And, like, that's okay. But you don't have them with, like, here, Flipper, you know, here's a one-way ticket and, you know, deliver the warhead. You're like, we don't do that.
Polar bear, you hold on to this assault weapon. If any Russians try to cross the border, you shoot.
Yeah, but the marine mammal doesn't include a polar bear. So there's
that. It's close enough to marine.
They yeah, but thinking back, you know.
All right, beluga whale. We're strapping a laser gun to your head.
Beluga whale.
Use it on the polar bears. Only use it on the Russians if they invade.
That's, you say it like it's weird. right now, there's probably someone at the Pentagon listening going like, yeah, we're down with that. We should give it a try. Because why not?
Hey.
That being said, there was...
Didn't Austin Powers, remember that? Wasn't that the first Austin Powers where Dr. Evil was going to kill him with the sharks with the lasers on their heads or something?
Yes, and they couldn't afford them, so they got, what, Barracuda or something? So similar to that, but different. So I do think the military could be legally able to do it. First time it's deployed probably would be the last time. You know, because depending on how the mission goes, because if the mission's a failure and everyone's fighting the velociraptors, the mission's a failure.
Right.
If the velociraptors target the correct side, and if anyone is able to get up YouTube video of human beings being ripped apart by velociraptors, it's over. It's over at that point. There's, you know, no one was like, oh yeah, that was a good plan. Let's use that in law enforcement. What possibly could crack houses are dangerous. Let's just send in velociraptors. And that would not hold water. We would not do that and say like, hey, it's like a German shepherd. No, they're not.
No.
They are not like German shepherds. So
as we're discussing the use of velociraptors, but
so that being said, it was a super fun summer movie, and there are a bunch more coming out that will be a
there
lot.
There are a ton coming out. Holy cow! We could just spend all summer just reviewing the movies coming out. I guess that's what we'll be doing.
You say it like it's a bad thing, Jessica.
No, there's just so many movies. I'm like, where is the time to do all of this? That is my problem.
Well, maybe after Comic-Con.
Ah, nice teaser. All right, more to that on the next time we talk, right, Josh?
Exactly. And stay tuned for our third anniversary, which should be special. So, Jessica, good night.
Good night. Enjoy Central Time, Josh, while you're here.
I shall, because we're on a mission from God. Stay geeky, America. Stay geeky.